So like I said earlier, as we head towards Easter, we're looking at lament today. And as a culture, you probably already know this, we don't do this well. We have these cultural mottos of just do it, or pull yourself up by your bootstraps, grin and bear it. And we elevate those that persist in the face of pain and grief. We are a culture that does not know what to do when Simone Biles chooses health over a gold medal. Not only as a culture, but as the American church as well, we don't lament well. Soong Chan Ra says, the American church avoids lament, but lament is a missing, essential component of Christian faith. Lament recognizes struggles and suffering, that the world is not as it ought to be. Lament challenges the status quo and cries out for justice against existing injustices. And the Bible theologians have identified two different types of lament. Lament in the Hebrew Bible is an expression of sorrow, a description of distress, or a protest about injustice. They identify two main genres that serve such purposes. And these are either in poetic or musical lyric form. Lament as a prayerful plea to God for help and or a complaint to God over social injustice. Lament as a dirge about the death or destruction of something or someone, and oftentimes our planet. Lament can take many forms, and most notably we see them in creative forms, right? Art, poetry, hymns, and songs. Even think today of popular songs or songs that you really enjoy. How many of those are a lament? How many of those are mourning the loss of someone or a relationship, or things are not as they should be? A contemporary example of a dirge would be Elton John and Bernie Taupin's Candle in the Wind about Marilyn Monroe, and then later about Princess Diana. They added verses in there for her. First two verses from Psalm 22 are also a prayerful plea. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from my cries of anguish? My God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer. By night, but I find no rest. I don't know about you, but I've prayed prayers similar to that. And here David's expressing his own experience of feeling abandoned by God. Here's the most intense suffering God's servant can know, not just in David's example that enemies surround him and that his body is in dreadful pain. He goes on throughout the psalm to express both of those. But David also goes on that he feels that God does not hear him and does not care about his suffering. It's not just the experience of David. I think all of us that follow God have experienced something like this. Maybe this is how you're feeling right now. We wonder how our loving heavenly Creator can stand idly by when we are in such distress. Later on in that same psalm, even in David's extreme distress, we see him claiming the knowledge that God is God, that he remembers God's past faithfulness and the ways God took care of him. We see David's hope also in the earnestness of his prayer for present relief. He knows that God can help, and he turns to God as the only one who will help. Later on, verse 11, "But you, O Lord, do not be far off. O you, my help, come quickly to my aid." It is admirable that rather than turning away from God, David turns to God. He reaches out to God. I think sometimes it's one of the most confusing places in our grief, that we know that God can help. Maybe even historically, we have sensed that, felt that, known that. So why isn't God helping in this circumstance right now? Does God not care? Is God not listening? The real and inescapable problems of life in this fallen world bring us to our knees. Prayer can lead us to remembering and meditating on the promises of God, both those fulfilled in the past and those that we trust will be fulfilled in the future. And I want you to hear me that I'm not suggesting that you have to get to the place of trust right away. In fact, I'm going to encourage you not to. Because I think God is forming us when we sit in our grief and in the pain. I'll explain that more later. In our Western culture, we rush to avoid pain. We're very good at putting a Band-Aid on it so we can function, put on that face so we can go out into the world. One of the very real temptations of vices is to not feel, or at least get back to normal, or ways to numb our pain. I think in COVID this has been especially difficult. We've all been eager to return back to normal, and the pandemic has not allowed us to, and we don't know how to cope with that. It's been hard. And in fact, it's been hard and we've been isolated. To lament isn't easy, and it makes us incredibly uncomfortable, and we don't do discomfort very well at all. Lament is a true reality of living in a broken world. Things are not as they should be. Howard Macy, in his book Rhythms of the Inner Life, says, "Even when we see the struggle in ourselves, we are tempted to conceal it rather than disclose it. Sometimes we even put on our brave face before God. After all, to admit struggle seems to be admitting that we have failed as disciples. So while we feign joy, we trudge on, silently stooped by our burdens, and we secretly waste away. What we need to do instead is to unmask our struggle and despair and to learn, as people of faith, how to encounter them." When we experience deep sorrow, we have the ability to see that God holds us and sees us, that God goes before us and walks beside us. We saw in the Gospels that Jesus experienced deep grief and loss, and he modeled for us. He lamented, he cried out, he was in anguish. And then he modeled for us how to allow that weight of grief to move him into places of compassion and care. When we allow ourselves to feel our pain and grief, we are more equipped to sit with others in their pain. Our experience with pain can recognize and relate to others in pain as well. We can then host each other in what some call a ministry of presence, sitting with those in pain, not doing a thing. In the Old Testament, the prophets, who are creative lyricists, took the dirge form and applied it to their own nation, ancient Israel, in their prophetic chants or songs. It's also the case that the prophets spoke out of great compassion for those oppressed by the powerful, giving voice to a lament on behalf of the voiceless over injustice, as we see in Jeremiah 22. When they felt compelled to express God's displeasure over unethical, unjust, or unfaithful behavior, the prophets would often sing a death song over the nation as a warning or a communal dirge. Jeremiah's song in Jeremiah 4, 23 to 26 fits this bill. Jeremiah, however, even broadens this use of dirge by pointing to the death of all creation, which makes this oracle a cosmic dirge. I beheld the earth, and lo, it was without form and void, and the heavens, and they had no light. I beheld the mountains, and lo, they trembled, and all the hills moved lightly. I beheld, and lo, there was no man, and all the birds of the heavens were fled. I beheld, and lo, the fruitful place was a wilderness, and all the cities thereof were broken down at the presence of the Lord and by his fierce anger.
Whoa.
How many of these psalms do we feel like we could say right now? Howard Macy, again, in his book, says that the first lesson of lament, the first lesson the Hebrew singers teach us, is simply to be honest. Clearly, the first step of this is to be honest with ourselves, which sometimes can be the hardest. I think we're really good at tricking ourselves or convincing ourselves or masking it or band-aiding it or avoiding it. And I don't know why being honest about our grief or pain makes us feel or think that we're a failure. What is the connection between being honest about our pain with failure? Why do we put value in that? Because we couldn't fix it on our own? Because we're having negative feelings, because we weren't able to get over it. Jesus modeled this for us, modeled lament. The Psalms are littered with it. Grieving and loss and lament are part of the human condition, so why are we so avoidant of it? Once we are honest with ourselves, we can take the next step and be honest with God and hopefully those around us to grieve together. 20 years ago this summer, my housemate and good friend Gloria died in a car crash. And the state trooper came to my doorstep and shared the news with me. And after reaching her family, Gloria's friends, myself included, started gathering at the Woolseys. And it was like we innately knew we couldn't handle this alone. We had to be together. And we called Colin Saxton and Jean Schuhart, our pastors at the time. And in that acute state of shock, I kept crying. And I still remember what Colin said in that moment, or at least how I remember it. He said, "The grief and the loss you're feeling is love. Love for Gloria, and that is holy." In that moment, Colin validated what I was feeling. He saw me and my pain and encouraged me. And friends, it felt like the embodiment of God. It felt like God was with me in that moment. And it was permission. Sometimes we need to give ourselves permission. And sometimes somebody else needs to help us give ourselves permission. Howard goes on to say that after honesty, the next lesson is a confession of trust, of looking historically how God has been there for them. He goes on to say, quote, "We must not, however, confuse confessions of trust with feelings of trust." A difference between confession and feeling. When we're in despair, we may not feel trust at all. Indeed, our struggle is often over whether we can even trust. When we feel left in the lurch and ignored, feelings of trust do not come easily. In their stead, then, we must choose to trust. Trust becomes a matter of will, end quote. So as we choose to trust, we remember. We remember the ways God has helped us in the past, the traits of God's character, and we affirm what we have known of God. And that even in our lament, God hasn't changed, even when we feel that God has abandoned us. The last lesson of lament is one of patience, to sit and wait with God and with others, to trust that similar to our seasons, to the seasons that are all around us, we have cycles of our inner lives as well. In my last Howard quote, he goes on to say, "To learn from the psalmist's laments the ways of honesty, trust, and patience help us when we are caught in despair. But even these, as useful as they are, supply neither easy formula nor instant cures. There are none. Struggles will come. We will be tempted to choose pious sham over truth. We may stammer our confessions of trust. Our cries for help may sound more pushy than patient. Yet for those that know God, that is not the whole story. The pulse of the Creator's heart resonates in the secret chambers of our own, so that we know somehow deeply that despair is not the last word." End quote. I worry that doing a sermon of lament and also talking about patience and trust, that you might feel like I'm wanting you to get through those lessons really quick. I want an A. I want to encourage you the permission to be in what, if you're in one of these phases or these stages, to give yourself permission to be in whichever stage you're in. And I doubt it's linear. I don't think it's feel it, trust, patience. It's probably a whole jumble. Walter Brueggemann says, "A community of faith which negates lament soon concludes that the hard issue of justice are improper questions to pose at the throne, because the throne seems only a place of praise. I believe it thus follows that if justice questions are improper questions at the throne," which is a conclusion drawn through liturgic use, "they soon appear to be improper questions in public spaces, in schools, in hospitals, within the government, and eventually even in the courts. Justice questions disappear into civility and docility. The order of the day comes to seem absolute, beyond question, and we are left with only grim obedience and eventually despair. The point of access for serious change has been forfeited when the propriety of this speech form is denied." I told Nate I almost didn't use that one because it was way too heady. But that first line about a community of faith that negates lament soon concludes that the hard issues of justice are improper questions to pose at the throne. That, friends, is what I want to encourage us to be guarded against. To be a place of worship that allows for lament. That we believe God wants our lament, that the throne is exactly the place to bring your cries of injustice, of grief, of sorrow, of loss, and that we do that together. In other cultures, we see healthier displays of lament. In Guatemala, folks often wear black for a year. Other cultures do the same, right? It's a way to say to those around you, hey, I'm still grieving. I'm still in this process. Help create space for me, please. I don't know how often Nate and I meet with someone, and the first month after a grief or a loss, there's a lot of people around you, and then life goes on. And sometimes I think about that practice of wearing black for a year, like, I think that would be helpful. Be a reminder. In the wake of the devastating earthquake in Haiti in 2010, we saw Haitians take to the street, arm in arm, singing for hours. Haitians had lost so many loved ones, and they innately knew they needed to be together to hold each other up and join their voices together. I wonder, friends, as individuals and as a church, can we be honest with ourselves when we're in a season of lament? Can we allow space for each other who are lamenting? And what work does God need to do in us to allow for that? We're going to enter a time of waiting on God together. I have a couple queries if they're helpful. Is there a lament that you need to acknowledge in yourself, or to God, or to others? Or in the past, how have you dealt with lament? And is God inviting you to something different? If these queries are helpful, use them and ask God to go there with you. If they're not, dump them. I trust that Spirit's already working as we listen to God together. If you have something to share that you feel like God has led to you for the entire meeting, I encourage you to stand so a microphone will be brought to you. It's possible that God has a message just for you or a few others, and we ask you to hold that and be faithful to that. Let's listen together.